It's Saturday, July 26, 2008, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on GeekSpeak, the Week in Geek News. In the second half, your questions and comments. It's time now for GeekSpeak.
The bandwidth for GeekSpeak.org is provided by GNI, GNIHosting.com.
Welcome to GeekSpeak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during GeekSpeak are not necessarily those of KUSP. After the Geek News, we'll be taking your calls with questions and comments about technology. You can ask us anything you'd like today. We have a lot of expertise in the air room, and we'd be happy to help you out. Of course, you're welcome all the time to go to geekspeak.org and click on our forums to participate there. Welcome to GeekSpeak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air room with me, I have Sean Cleveland, Senior Technical Marketing Manager at NVIDIA.
Good morning.
Miles Elam, Student Programmer and Political Junkie.
Good morning.
And Ryder Brooks, Support Engineer at Sun Microsystems.
Hello.
We're going to take calls with questions and comments about technology. We can take pretty much anything, but we are going to do it in about a half an hour during the second half. And while we're waiting for that, I'd like to go ahead and handle the Geek News as we do every week. And Miles, I'd like to start with you, if you don't mind.
I do mind. No, I'm just kidding. Telecoms are suing over high-speed links. This story from Law.com, Law Technology, is talking about how telecoms have been ignoring many municipalities that are outside of a major metropolitan area. But at the same time, when those smaller cities or municipalities start trying to get themselves online mm-hmm. to lay their own fiber, the telecoms are turning around and suing them, trying to get them to stop.
Because they want the business that they're not used
to. And they don't
want
the competition. They don't want the ball to get rolling that municipalities would have this idea of, oh, well, if they're not going to do it for us, then we'll just do it ourselves, because right. then you start ending up with a lot of them doing it themselves.
I'm kind of back and forth on whether, you know, government should be producing internet access for the public. I'm like not sure if that's the best mm-hmm. way for our growth, and there is a debate and stuff. But the idea, if a company's not handling it, that they're going to sue the government agency not to do it is ridiculous. I mean, how are those people going to get served?
Basically, the story is that telecoms would get around to them eventually, so they uh-huh. should just wait. That's the message that's going.
What about
through.
Like these? What about these municipalities saying if no one serves these customers within? If no one submits a plan that gives a, you know, 1 year of service for these people, we will do it. And in doing that, they protect themselves from future lawsuit because, of course, if no one's going to, you know, do you see what I'm saying?
You would think that would be a logical way yeah. to do it, but I'm not so sure the telecoms want to do that because that's not their impetus. Their impetus isn't saying, oh, we wanted to get in there, but now we're being headed off. Mm-hmm. They've never shown any interest in getting in there, at least not in the short term.
Yeah.
So it would not be in an interest to say, like, yes, give us a timeline, to be dictated a timeline.
Right, right. All right, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, the longer they delay things, the better it is for them, because right. then it at their leisure, whenever they yeah. do say, oh, this is profitable.
Assuming no one fills the niche before
right.
they get there.
At the yeah. same time, having a municipality do this and then telecom sues them, that's suddenly this knowledge of, oh, there would be a market there. Because they have enough support right. now to right. to do it. So,
all right. Well, thank you, Miles, for the telecom suing communities story. Sean, hi.
Hi.
Well, let me ask you, Sean.
We need to get over this. We need to fix the bandwidth issues in the U.S.
It is pretty pitiful if you look at other countries.
It is horrible. I can't believe it. I was at my father's house. He lives in Ceres outside of Modesto, and he has DSL. Mm-hmm. And, guys, this speed's like dial-up speed, 300 kilobit per second. So I was downloading the XP Service Pack 3, yeah. you know, which is a 350 meg file. It took 2.5 hours. I get home. I did it in 4 minutes.
Because you have
over cable. Comcast cable.
Interesting. But 300 kilohertz, 300 kilobits is still a lot faster than actual dial-up. But
well, I'm just saying, comparatively, it feels like dial-up.
Why is he having such poor service there?
You know, because it's rural. Uh-huh. You know, anybody who's not in a city is just having horrible, because they either don't have you know, cable, because it's not there. They're doing DirecTV because they need right. satellite, but that's all they can get. And DSL is just too far.
Yeah.
And nobody's laying the fiber yet. Verizon has been mostly in metropolitan areas, right. again. And like I said, these municipalities that are saying, oh, we'll use fiber because we're pretty far from the beaten trail. Get your hub on, sure. you know, in a major metropolitan area and then connect up, and they get sued.
Now he could get higher speed. There are some smaller companies that are offering cable-like access mm-hmm. for, you know, $65 a month.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm getting mine for less than half that, and I'm getting, like, anywhere from 18 to 23 megabit.
Well, okay, $65 a month, I mean, that is expensive for internet access because we keep on thinking of this $20 rate internet access
fee. It's really expensive,
but if you think about it for cable television, it's not nearly as bad. I mean, people spend $120 for cable television. So that and if you look at the trends in what people are doing online, it's kind of replacing TV. So possibly that shift in bandwidth cost will happen. I mean, I'm paying only DSL rates for my, and I don't pay for television, cable television. But I could see increasing slowly and kind of accepting that, you know what, internet's important enough for me, and I will spend $50 a month on it if I can get high speed.
Well, you know what you're going to see is we're going to start seeing metering again. You know, how we're not going to get this, you know, flat rate service anymore. I mean, as the bandwidth demands go up, for these companies to make it profitable for them, they're going to have to stop just serving it up, you know, unlimited. You're going to see, you know, per minute charges again, or per megabyte charges, and that's
give me a break.
Okay, let's move on to the next news story. Ryder or Sean, who wants to go?
I think you said for me. I was just calling a Miles story.
Yeah, sure.
We all know how much XP just is horrible. Or no, I'm sorry. Just as horrible, XP is good. That's right. So Microsoft, you know, wanted to show off something new to a bunch of people in San Francisco.
A new OS.
Yeah, they called it Mojave. Codename Mojave. And they wanted to actually talk to people who don't like Vista, who are Vista skeptics. They wanted to see, well, what do you think of this?
But Vista skeptics that are still using Windows XP?
People who are using XP and have been, you know, talking bad about Vista. These are probably, you know, bloggers and forum people. I'm sure they had to find them somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, these marketing people got these guys together, and people together, I should say, and showed it off. And more than 90% gave positive feedback on what they saw. They actually liked what Microsoft was doing
on this thing,
and
this Mojave
OS that they were showing off. And then Microsoft said, "Well, actually, this is Vista."
Really?
Mojave is Vista. So, and you actually like it.
But 90% of the XP users who thought they hated Vista off of and didn't like it actually got a tour of Vista, didn't know it was Vista, and then said
90% of the XP users who were talking bad about Vista. Yeah, actually they liked Mojave, which turned out to be Vista.
That's a pretty good marketing tactic of Microsoft.
It is, yeah, for usability. I don't think a lot of people have really given Vista a chance.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, there are still a lot of reasons to not like Vista. You know, game performance, there are issues there. It's not as fast as XP.
You know, I just saw a little microcosm of this earlier, before we started the show, as I was kind of doing the close of the last show and stuff. You and Miles were talking about a new feature that Miles likes in the new upcoming Office suite. And you, Sean, who really use Word a lot, go, that's been there forever, and show him. And so,
well, not forever, but it's in Office 2007. We were talking about the ribbon bar and cool things, and you can add a table. And when you actually go to add a table, it brings down a little drop-down box with a bunch of squares. And you drag your mouse over the squares, you know, the column
and
the rows, and that built mm-hmm. the table, and you see it on your screen in real time. But, you know, Miles is in Linux. He's probably in a text-based environment.
Using Vim.
Yeah, I think he only brings up his GUI, his graphical user interface on his Mac, you know, for the show here to serve.
Other than that, it's all text. Yeah.
I think it's all text.
Funny enough, when I was at Cabrillo writing stories, I actually stopped writing stuff in Word because it was faster for me to just write up a quick thing in TextPad.
Right.
save it as a PDF and then mail it to myself to print out at school because I don't even own a printer.
Yeah, good example, Sean. You're totally right about Miles. But this is an example that, you know, I have a real aversions to Windows, to Office.
Aversion.
I don't know what I said, but yes, aversion to Windows Office or Microsoft Office. I don't use it very often at all. And the idea of someone who's a pro like you showing it off makes it look a lot better. I mean, it's a much more appealing thing. And that's basically true. I mean, if you think about anybody that's using computers a lot, if they're happy in the environment that they're using, if they feel comfortable and are doing well, if you watch them do it, you realize that, oh, I'm not using that environment very well.
Yeah.
But the thing is, that gets pretty technical too.
Everyone at work. So at work, people are still on Office 2003. And anyone can go up anytime to the network.
And get it for free.
And upgrade it to Office 2007. Right. It's there. It's available.
If you work in
Just everybody thinks, you know, oh, we don't need it. I'm used to what I got. You know, I don't want it to impact my productivity.
Sure.
So I showed off just a few of those types of things to people at work, and they just said, whoa, I got to upgrade.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I got to tell you, Office 2007 is much more, it has increased my productivity.
And that's
because I'm 1 to 2 clicks, 3 clicks most from everything because of that ribbon bar.
So that's example of what Microsoft just did by showing XP people Vista. They showed off somebody actively using it and showed off these great features, and the people that are in XP went, "Well, I would like those features."
Yeah.
Without that stigma of a label of an OS that had a lot of bad press.
Yeah.
There was also Office. Office for many years had fundamentally the same thing. You had the toolbar and you had the menus, except that they got more items in the menus and they got more items in the toolbar, and so you got into this. Well, I don't even use most of the features that are in there now.
Right. Like,
never mind. I'm just going to use the save button, you know, the fonts, and that's it. And then dig down to whatever I happen to need at the time. And I have to say, it's a belated discovery, but having seen the new version of Office, not to do a major plug on it, but it was a lot of other applications are going to be, among all platforms, are going to be emulating it, are going to be trying to copy it, trying to... Something that I haven't seen happen in a while. The people are going to try to copy Microsoft in a user interface.
It's that good, huh?
That is pretty interesting.
All right. All right. Well, thank you very much, Sean and Miles, for talking about the Mojave.
Mojave.
When I saw
which
this,
is Vista.
Yeah, which is Vista. Ryder, to you, sir.
All right. I want to talk a little bit about iPhone today again.
Oh, the iPhone.
Yeah.
I've heard of that.
Yeah, so, you know, it's popular. You know, it's much more popular than iPhone 1. Was, and it's selling twice as fast.
I heard rumor this morning that it was sold out.
Yeah, pretty much sold out. And right now they are, just one little side comment about what I want to talk about with it, is that they're doing prepayment. You know, basically people that have prepaid for the phone are getting all the next fulfillment orders, and anybody that wants to go wait up in line in their iPhone at the Apple store or AT&T store to buy one for their contract needs to wait until those orders are fulfilled. Mm. So there's an extreme shortage right now. Seems like the 16 gig is quite popular.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone I know wants the black one, not the white one. I don't know why. It's some sort of aesthetics thing.
Yeah, probably because the white one would get dirty too quick.
But wouldn't show scratches as much as the black one, though. You know, it's got that glossy back. But anyway, I want to talk a little bit about jailbreaking, and you know, you've been able to do it with the original iPhone.
And this basically means cracking the phone so that you can do anything you want.
Yeah,
on
so
it.
You can unlock it, put it on different service provider. Doing that it's a bit of a moot point with the G3. Version because you're kind of locked in. Most people are going to sign up for a 2-year commitment with AT&T, at least in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, for me, I like to pack things. You know, I like to do things you're not supposed to do with your hardware. So, you know, like my router, I throw a different version of Linux on it and whatnot than what was intended and do new cool things with it. And if I had an iPhone, I would do that as well. But I don't have one. But
are you going to buy one, Ryder? It sounds like you're talking yourself into it.
No. Well, I mean, half my coworkers have one or want one. And
so I was with a friend last night, and he had his older iPhone, not the newer one, but the older one, and he'd upgrade to the 2.0 software, the most recent software, and it was cracked. So he's able to crack it, too.
Yeah.
So it is that part of it's crackable. Yeah.
So, of course, aside from, you know, switching carriers, you can install
tons of applications
that are not part of the App Store, the official applications. And a new application that came out is called three proxy, four proxy. It basically allows you to tether your G your G3 iPhone to your laptop. It basically it creates an ad hoc wireless network that allows your laptop to use your G3 network connection if you're not in a Wi-Fi area.
That's appealing.
Which is something that, that Apple does not let you do currently.
Right. Use it as a modem, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's pretty compelling. Yeah,
so that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And also, you're not restricted by the application development that the App Store presents with you with the Apple SDK. And I've heard developers indicating that their updates to their Apple Store applications are being rejected over really trivial things like grammatical errors in their online help files or Apple deeming their application not as usable as they would like it to be.
Yeah.
So they're stuck with kind of buggy software on their App Store and they can't get their apps through. You know, they're basically it's a revision update process with some stamp of approval that's basically being rejected.
This whole idea of having a control zone where Apple lets people decide what goes on your phone is, I get the idea behind it, but it's too control. I don't like it at all.
It is very restrictive.
And I've been able to, I've had a cracked phone right now, and I've been able to install apps for a long time. And yeah, they're buggy, and sometimes they're problematic, and I have issues with it. But I'm investing my time, and I'm interested in it, and it's my decision. Yeah. And the idea of Apple saying, no, it's not your decision as a user, it's you own the phone, kind of, but we actually control it, is
the diversity of applications that you can install also just right off the network is much more diverse than anything that the App Store has.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, thank you, Ryder.
Sure.
Miles, what's going on with mathematics?
There's been a recent article published that girls and boys are in fact equal at math and math ability. Literally nothing. There is no difference in the scores between U.S. boys and girls in common math tests.
Mm-hmm.
What they have found, however, is that among white children, boys do significantly better than girls. But among Asian children, girls do significantly better than boys at about the same proportion. So they're finding that it's far more cultural than and society-based than actual genetics or gender.
Well, gender-based genetics, but couldn't it be that the genetics of white people have a preference for males?
Human beings are far too homogenous genetically for that to be the case. You have more in common genetically with some random person on the street necessarily than any race difference, ethnicity, than someone who may also be white, for example.
Okay. And also you can look at math scores based off of the two populations of... So what this basically shows is that all the trends of mathematics and engineers and stuff in the United States being mostly men or higher percentage men is completely social.
That's what they're finding. There may be some – who knows if there's some aspect to the desire to go into IT or not, but they're talking about with just basic ability, because that's a whole other question. I'm not trying to open up that Pandora's box.
Right.
But at the same time, another thing that they found was that the mathematics section of the SAT test has been getting statistically easier.
Oh, that's...
Like standardized tests are becoming not...
This is kind of unrelated to this study?
Right.
Yeah.
But it's along the lines of... the U.S. has already fallen behind with regard to math. U.S. students among developed nations tend to be far behind their counterparts in Europe and Asia. This has been a longstanding issue. But what they're finding now is that the tests aren't as hard, the standardized tests, the national tests.
Right.
So that becomes an issue of, is someone just trying to pump up our numbers, make us look better without actually making the students better at math?
Interesting. All right. Well, thank you very much, Miles, for that. Mr. Cleveland, which of these amazing stories would you like to handle?
You know, I want to talk about magic tricks only because
good. I like that one.
I thought you would.
Yeah.
So Lyle is pretty good sleight of hand.
Amateur.
But you're more than amateur. It helps that when you have kids and you practice a lot, which you do. And my little girl is almost 3, and when you do these sleight of hand tricks to her, her mouth drops and she's just blown away, and I think she has nightmares.
Good. have nightmares.
Kids just find this stuff
so
incredible.
So magic tricks we're talking about, sleight of hand.
Yeah, so this stuff has been around for thousands of years, right? People have been performing magic.
Mm-hmm.
Well, cognitive science has only been around for 50 years, and now they're starting to study. Where are people looking when this stuff happens?
Yeah, why aren't they seeing that?
You know, so like a typical trick. And this is from a news story from the Canadian Press. And we'll have a link on our site.
We already have it?
So the trick starts, a guy's holding a lighter and a cigarette, and he fumbles, and the lighter vanishes in the thin air. And then where did the cigarette go? You know, and people are watching these things fall into his lap, but they just don't see him. Something's happening there. Where are they looking? Why? And a sleight of hand is, you know, kind of moving people's attention away from one thing to another.
It seems like your brain is filling in gaps.
So they're starting to study this now to see where are people looking? What's going on here? Because this same information could be used for interface design on computers. Where do people look on a screen?
Mm-hmm.
Where are they getting their information from? Where are the most important spots on a screen to look? When you're driving, you know, what are people failing to see when they get in accidents? And what do they focus on when things move into the, you know, a certain line of vision? So I just thought it was an interesting article. Go check it out.
Listen, this is a great quote. From the cigarette and lighter trick where they drop cigarettes and lighters into their laps, most participants didn't notice the magician drop the cigarette under a table, even though it was dropped from 15 centimeters above the table in plain view. That's a lot of distance. So... yeah, why is it that a person is not seeing it? That's the most amazing thing. And when you're when you do sleight of hands, you can pick up on that. It's a lot harder to do a magic trick if someone is watching you trying to figure it out. But if they are surprised by your action, it's very mind-blowing. Yeah. I've had people kind of get stunned and shocked simply by doing something like that, by holding something in my hand and then pretending I'm moving it to my other hand and not. That can really break people's minds. And then when they realize that something's wrong... The first reaction is awe and amazement rather than, ooh, clever. You know, people want to trust their brains.
Yeah.
So that's another part of this, is that it really shows that you can't really trust your brain nearly as much as you think you can. And
that we're finally, you know, studying what people are actually doing and why these things happen, you know. And how can you take this information and make computers better?
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll follow this kind of stuff. I think it's really interesting.
Yeah, it's very cool stuff. All right. Well, we got time for one more. Whose turn is it? Ryder? Miles? I can't remember. Miles, go for it. I jumped on you. Ha ha. Go ahead.
It looks like Craigslist is in a bit of a sticky spot. There was a recent ruling saying that the online auction spot or trading post, I guess best way to describe it, must reveal the identity of an online seller.
Wait, so someone sues Craigslist and says you've got to tell us who this identity of this person is.
Right.
Wow, so what were they trying to sell?
But they were trying to sell an online ticket to the Oscars. Trying to sell a ticket to the Oscars
space. They had somehow gotten Oscar tickets and were selling them on Craigslist.
For $2,500 bucks a piece.
The Academy of Motion Sciences sues Craigslist?
Yes. Now, the curious thing about this is that Craigslist did not actually send anyone to the hearing. So the ruling was actually by default.
Oh, that's a shame.
But this comes into some curious questions. This is definitely some gray area that the Academy does not tells people when they give out the tickets, allowed to sell or buy these. But then comes the question of did someone actually have to verbally say yes or sign a paper, or do they just get the tickets mailed with a little notice saying you're not allowed to do that? Because the last one doesn't seem like it would be very enforceable.
Right, but that doesn't – I mean, I think the sad thing here is that the Craigslist didn't try to fight it, because now it's setting a precedence, right? I mean
– Well, is it though? Because it's a default judgment.
Okay, so maybe it's not.
So there wasn't actually a back and forth. Now, at the same time, I do sympathize with the Academy with regard to their tickets, saying they want to know who's going to be there.
Right,
because
they make a
otherwise
lot of money on this.
Otherwise security becomes a major issue. To say if someone wants to disrupt
the
Academy
Awards. Right? The tickets are given away
to people who are either prominent members of the Academy or people who are up for an award.
Right.
And
it's really not – it's you can almost think of it in this sense that it's not exact. I mean, it's a ticket, yes, to make it smooth, but it's an invite-only event. It's not a public event because you can't go buy a ticket, right? So therefore, since it's an invite-only, they can control the people that they want to come and who they don't want to come.
Well, that's the question. That's how it is in terms of perception. How are they actually giving out the tickets?
Right. Did they really – did you have to sign anything?
Right.
Right.
Or did you have California honors verbal agreements as well.
Yeah.
If they hand it to you and say, you must do this, okay, I agree to it. That should be good enough.
All right. Thank you very much.
So it's a curious thing to follow, though.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wish that Craigslist had protected their users. I think that's kind of I think that's bad. I mean, I'm a Craigslist member, and
I would have preferred that they showed up at least to give a point of view, even if they had acquiesced to saying. Because I am also for if there is a actual breach to go to the courts and say this is a special case, there should be a special exemption exemption for this.
Yeah.
So that it isn't just someone sues and you don't show up and there you get the information.
GeekSpeak on KOSP supported by Dr. Don Motika announcing OptimageHealth.com in Santa Cruz, a functional medicine practice and consultation service combining an array of modalities to achieve and maintain wellness. Appointments available at OptimageHealth.com. And, of course, that is Dr. Dawn, who was on right before GeekSpeak every week. If you don't hear her show, I highly recommend it. She's quite talented. All right. We're taking calls with questions and comments of technology. The phone numbers about technology, excuse me. The phone numbers are 476-2800. That's, again, that's in the 831 area code, 476-2800. Or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us if you want to send us email or participate on our amazing forums, forums.geekspeak.org, where we answer questions all week long. All right, while we're waiting for calls to come in to pour in, let's go ahead and go to... Yes.
I want to know if anyone's tried out Googlepedia yet.
Googlepedia?
Yes.
No.
Have you heard of it?
No.
It's a new add-on for Firefox. And what it does is when you put in a search, you know, you search for anything in Google, it cuts the page in half. It gives you the searches, Google searches on the left. And on the right, it gives you the Wikipedia entry.
Nice.
So I just searched for Miles Elam in Google, and it brought up the GeekSpeak Wikipedia entry on the right.
Of which apparently that page needs a citation. I'm curious, though, when it says it's one of the top five most popular tech podcasts on the NPR website and maintains a 5-star rating from iTunes listeners and says citation needed. How do you... Do you put in a link to the iTunes store? I mean, how do you make a citation for that?
I don't know, but we're not 5 stars on iTunes. No. We're 4.5.
Oh, we are?
Yeah.
Did we drop?
Well, we didn't drop. I don't know. There's like 25 reviews. I don't know if you can ever get above that 4.5 if you have,
the
four or so.
Drag you down.
Yeah, if you really want to help our numbers or our ratings, go to iTunes and write a review about us. Unless, of course, you're going to say bad things, in which case, don't bother.
So the Googlepedia is really interesting, although...
Okay, so
what's neat about Google
is... Where do I find the plugin?
I just search for Googlepedia. You'll find the plugin. What's kind of cool about Google, I don't know if a lot of people know this, but in the search field, you can actually, if you want to find out what 70 degrees Celsius is in Fahrenheit, you can actually do it. You could just type in 70C in F.
70C in F.
Yeah, 70C space N space F. And it'll come up 70 degrees Celsius equals 158 degrees Fahrenheit.
That's fantastic.
I do these kind of measurement conversions all the time between metric and standard. It's a really neat little tool. But with Googlepedia, it shows up on the right-hand side, the Sikorsky S-70 combat helicopter.
Because you put a 70 in. Yeah.
So, you know,
it's not
Googlepedia
perfect.
Is not perfect. Right. But I have found that it enhances my searches a lot of times, especially for information. It's kind of neat to see what sites come up when I search for something and the Wikipedia entry on the right. So if anyone's interested, go check it out. I thought it was kind of cool.
And I'm adding that to our website right now. Actually, you know what, Sean? Will you fix this post? Okay, it's connected to the show, but you'll figure it out. All right, cool. Let's start taking some calls, I think. I am all over the place today, but Rick is in the front desk space, and he's taking people's calls and piping them in. So, Rick Feldman, thank you for being here every week. That doesn't sound so good. Blaze from Santa Cruz, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hey, thanks, Lyle. So I have a question. I have a Firefox browser that I'm using on a Windows platform. And what I would like to do is prevent websites from timing me out on very specific pages. So, like, here's an example of what's happening. I'm on the post office site. I'm doing click and check labels, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I'm shipping. I'm doing a lot of things. I'm taping boxes. And, you know, there's these time intervals where I'm just away from the computer. And, you know, I want to ship a series of boxes. And I come back to the computer all the time, and the things time me out. So can I... what I'm thinking is would there be some kind of script or something that could just, like, refresh the page while I'm not looking at it, you know?
There are probably extensions that will do exactly that.
Extensions for Firefox?
I've run across them on occasion. Sometimes they're specific. What you can actually do is create your own thing. There's an extension called Grease Monkey that allows you to create custom scripts to pretty much modify whatever you want. It's pretty extensible. And
I don't have much experience writing scripts, although I've done some programming.
Well, there are a lot. There's a user database collection of Grease Monkey scripts, so you could browse through there.
Is this a service or a software?
It's software.
It's an extension, and they have a community website through Grease Monkey that has a lot of extensions. I mention it because I actually use something very specific that my work put together for a similar problem where we're timing out. We use Oracle, and we have timeout problems with an application that's web-based, and they just gave us a keep alive script that we use through Grease Monkey, and it basically kind of updates the page every minute.
Or effectively does a refresh, like a location history zero every 30 seconds or so.
So is that a script that you could submit or tell us about or something? Could you grab that copy of the...
I could probably explain how it works and give an example.
Maybe in a forums thing? Blaze, why don't you go ahead and visit our forums and ask this question, and Ryder and I will kind of answer how to do it and give you an example of the script and stuff and kind of walk you through it. That's a great place for the forums because it is pretty technical. I couldn't actually describe it on air, but...
Okay. Is Grease Monkey something that you buy or
no, Grease Monkey's free. If you go to the extensions page at Mozilla, just search for Grease Monkey, it'll pop up.
Okay. And so you get that thing going, and then there's just collections of scripts that are out there that you can employ within that.
And here's an example of a Grease Monkey script that I've done before. Somebody found the way to download a YouTube video. So you installed Grease Monkey and then you install this script just for the YouTube domain. And whenever you're on YouTube, there's a little new button at the very top of the page, and it's actually being added by Grease Monkey. You push that, and it saves the Flash file to your local system.
Very cool. So you can just view it. You can have a little library of
without having
to be streaming.
That's right. That's kind of the idea. Oh, so Grease Monkey is that kind of – yeah, it's a great little feature. Thank you, Blaze, for the call.
Okay, sure thing. Thank you. Bye now.
Well, let's take another call, shall we? What the heck, huh? If you'd like to call with questions and comments about technology, you're welcome to do so. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. From Capitola, Ted, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Welcome. Thank you. I'm calling about a little device that I was given as a gift. It was called, it had an instruction set that came with it that said, beam it. The piece itself was emblazoned with IROC on the front.
Okay, it's an IROC.
Yeah, you know what that is?
A little FM transmitter thing.
Right, exactly. Now, on the front of it, it has a little pin there that says for a 12-volt battery input.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried faxing these guys. I tried emailing them. I went to their website and everything. I can't get them to respond to me. Do you know anything about that?
So you want a little transmitter, a little thing that you can plug in rather than using batteries?
Exactly.
Yeah. Does it have a symbol on it that says with a little plus and minus pointing to kind of a C with a dot in it?
No.
Okay. So
it just said...
just says 12 volts?
I don't think it even said 12 volts on the front.
How do you know what it is? What, you'd mentioned 12 something.
Here's the thing. I had put it down, and I called you guys because I just happened to realize that it was time for Geek Speak, and so I called you up. And now I can't find it someplace.
Isn't that always the way? It's very equivalent to when I go and help somebody with the tech questions and I come to their desk and they try to show me a problem. Of course, the problem doesn't happen then, right? It's like that mystic thing. Well, try to find it and let us know. But basically what you're looking for, what I would do is try to find that product, try to purchase that product. And when you're doing that, take a look at what is available and what kind of information is there. Another thing you can do is this kind of cheating thing maybe, but if you look on eBay and you try to find that item and try to buy it on eBay, you'll find a seller.
Not.
What's that?
I said that's a good thought.
And then don't actually sell it. Just send a note asking the seller, saying, hey, does that come with a power supply? And ask them questions about it. And then just go, hey, can you help me out? I've got one of these. And maybe they'll tell you exactly the details.
Yeah.
And the information you're curious about when you're dealing with a power supply like this, what I like to call them wall warts, because they're like these black boxes that stick on a plug in a wall.
What do you call them?
Wall wart. A wall wart.
Wall wart, yeah.
Yeah, you know those black things that if you plug into a wall,
oh,
it kind of looks
good. Ever.
Yeah. So the things you're looking for are voltage and polarity. It's extremely important. And
right.
Normally the device that you have, the polarity will be noted on the device by saying that the center pin is a plus or a minus and the shell of it is not. And then, of course, whether it fits or not. But it is going to be hard to find the exact match.
Yeah.
And if you don't know the polarity of your device, plugging it in the wrong way can very, very fry
everything.
Yeah.
How did you know about this thing?
How'd I go about which thing?
No, how did you know about the IROC?
I don't know. I'm a geek.
Well, I just thought maybe there was a contact point there.
You know, maybe I have had been upselled about the IROC. I don't recall. Did you send an email to the geeks, right?
I did, yeah.
Okay, well, I'll take a look at that after the show today and see if I do have some information. I might know the marketing arm for that group.
If anybody's got an IROC and you've got an adapter, let us know what the
tell
specs
tell us all
are,
about it. Yeah, that'd be great.
right.
Thank you very much.
Your little device, it was cheap, you know, so hey.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Might as well leverage our listening audience for an answer.
Yeah, Sean.
Yeah, you know, there's a new hard disk recovery company in Santa Cruz.
There is?
Yeah, it's called Redisk Me. That's with a K.
I didn't know about this. This is
yeah,
great.
Yeah, they're located on Soquel Avenue. And I actually heard I was listening to NPR, and they underwrote a show, and you know NPR kind of does a little blurb at the end of the show, and it's like, what? Oh, interesting. I always want to keep up on who these companies are, and then I went to their website and just found out, oh, they're in Santa Cruz, and their prices are not as crazy as some of the other recovery places. So if you've got a hard drive that needs recovered, and you're local in Santa Cruz or, you know, this area, then
we
might want to check them out.
We got to get them on. Absolutely. Can you find the URL and stuff and post it?
I think
that'd be great information. Additionally, Miles, you found one of you guys found a plugin for refreshing a web page.
Yeah, I just went to Firefox add-ins and did a search and got Session Keeper 0.5.1, which seems to talk exactly about what that person needed. You give a URL that when you go to that URL, it starts pinging that interval, whatever you set, like every 15 minutes. Or,
mm-hmm.
And then as soon as you hit, like, say, a logout page, that's when it stops doing it.
Right. Makes sense. So Session Keeper, and that's a Firefox plugin?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. I'm adding it to the page.
Although, folks, use responsibly. Please don't set it to every 5 minutes. Web developers will thank you. 15 minutes probably would be a good metric there.
Yeah, that's a good point. If a whole bunch of people doing it really fast, you can take a website down.
And when you're done using that site, please hit log out.
Or just turn off the Session Keeper app. I mean, there's got to be some kind of controls on it, I'm assuming. Well, there's a good answer for us. That's wonderful. Thank you very much for that. All right, let's go ahead and start taking some more calls. We've got a call from the community I live in, Felton, California. Mary, welcome to Geek Speak.
I'm having trouble connecting or getting to work external hard drive.
Can you speak up a little bit, Mary, or put your...
Okay. That better?
Oh, that's a little better, Mary.
Okay.
Yeah.
Trouble with external hard drives. We bought one, and we connected it to one Dell XP,
mm-hmm.
and it didn't work at all. And then we connected it to another XP that was locally configured, and... it's working.
Okay.
Then we bought another one for a different computer, and it's a different brand, and I hooked it up to my computer, and it's sporadic. And what happens is when you go to use it, the computer won't recognize it,
mm-hmm.
and then if you unplug it and plug it back in, it seems to work.
Okay. Well, first off, are these external UPS devices? Are they UPS? I mean, are they using UPS connections?
USB,
thank you.
Yes.
USB, okay. And do they have their own power supplies, or are they being powered by the computer? Meaning, do you have another plug that plugs into a socket?
Oh, boy.
So the reason that's important is that you can actually, on smaller
USB portable external enclosures. Uh-huh. You actually have to power them from the computer via the USB port, the USB cable, and the computers vary in their power ability on USB ports. So if you can plug it into the wall for power, that's the best way to go.
Plug into the wall. Okay.
Okay, so that's the first step. And the second thing is if it works sometimes and doesn't work other times, it's kind of problematic, and you're using XP, I would highly recommend upgrading to Service Pack 3 on XP. I'm not sure if it fixes any USB hard drive mounting problems, but that would be a big first step. Ryder, do you have another suggestion?
I don't think all external hard drives are the same in terms of their interfaces. They ought to be, but sometimes they will include USB driver software that will specifically recognize the drive.
Okay.
So if it comes with any software and you're having problems, I would recommend that you try installing any drivers that they might provide. Another option as well with the power, if rather than plugging it in directly, if it is not powered by the wall and it does require the USB to provide power to it, sometimes a USB external hub that is self-powered could also be used.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. Because a USB power hub, which is like a small external USB splitter, like it has a lot of USB ports, they sometimes have a power block, which is then provides enough power for these external things. And that's a good option in case you don't have a power supply for your external hard drive, which is kind of common.
And they in themselves can cause problems if you don't power them.
Right.
Like if they have an option to power those external ports and you don't provide power, I've seen USB connection problems where things don't show up properly.
So that could be it. So what Ryder's saying is all your connections to USB can be a part of the issue. Even a keyboard and mouse can cause some issues with your USB not then recognizing hard drives.
Huh, okay.
So that's a bit of a troubleshooting thing too. Keep in mind the logic of troubleshooting, right? When sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't work, try to figure out what's different about those two cases.
Yeah.
The different computers shouldn't matter that much, but an older OS might not auto mount as cleanly.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the call, Mary.
Yeah. And Lyle, aren't there, there's different specifications for USB connection cables, right? Aren't the 1.1?
Yeah, there's two types, USB 1.1 and USB 2.
If you have a 1.1 cable, could you have problems if it was, fall down to 1.1?
Yeah, it should slow down. It should just decrease the speed.
It wouldn't be spotty.
No, it should still work. Yeah. You get some error messages sometimes in the OS.
Okay.
From Watsonville, Judith, welcome back to GeekSpeak.
Hello,
Judith.
Hi. I just wanted to check in. You were talking about high-speed internet in underserved places.
Mm-hmm.
I called you before about I was getting a high-speed wireless internet connection. I was having some
lots
trouble.
Of problems. I recall, yes.
And they fixed something at the base station, and it's working great. So
at their end.
Yeah, at their end.
That's great. Okay, good. So the probs, I think we went through a lot of the different steps and finally came to the conclusion that talking to your ISP and making them fix it would probably be the best bet for you, and that worked.
Well, I was in contact with them, and they were trying to fix it, and then they did something at the base station, and now it's working great, and so I highly recommend RazzoLink, if you can get it.
What's the company again?
RazzoLink. And they're mainly in Salinas, and they go as far as Watsonville. And if there's hills between you and their base station, then you can't, they'll come out and they'll say you can't get it or you have to build a huge tower. But if you're in the right area, if you're out in the, the rural parts of Salinas and Byron's, then it may be, you can go to their site and see exactly all the places they serve. Anyway, I'm really pleased. It's so much, it's so much nicer to have a connection where I can also be talking on the phone at the same time. And
absolutely. And I want to say thank you, Judith. I know you call quite a bit on GeekSpeak, and I really appreciate you calling. But it's great to have someone say, we had trouble, and then it worked, and I highly recommend them, because that allows us to say in future, if you're looking for high-speed internet access wirelessly in Watsonville and in those areas, take a look at RazzoLink. Thank you very much for telling us.
Okay, you're welcome.
All right. Take care. Talk to you next time. All right, so We can take more calls, and you're welcome to call us with questions and comments of technology. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Again, that's 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. And, of course, you are welcome to participate in the forums. That's at geekspeak.org to talk to us all week long. Again, the phone number is to ask us anything you'd like. You had a problem with the hard drive, your question about what kind of keyboard to buy, whatever it is, we'll answer it. The phone numbers are 476-2800, and that's in the 831 area code. Again, that's 476-2800, or toll-free anywhere in the U.S., 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. As we wait for those calls to come in, we've got time for one more news story. Miles, you want to get us a little update on libraries? I know that's not exactly something you're going to cover right now, but
let's hold off on that story.
Any other Geek 7? Sean, please.
Oh,
You raised your hand, so I thought, what the heck?
Yeah, what happened was I wanted to talk about a story, and I restarted Firefox when I added Googlepedia so I could talk about it.
Oh.
So here it is. I want to talk about a breakthrough with OLEDs. This is kind of interesting.
Sorry, what are OLEDs?
They're organic light-emitting diodes, and they're not as bright as LEDs, like maybe 60 to 70% as bright, because OLEDs create light parallel to the device instead of perpendicular, so you don't see the light. So what they've done is they've come up with really interesting materials that reflect the light off the OLED, so it pushes it out and you have a bright diode. So this is really cool, because OLEDs don't use a lot of power. They give off great light, better light than LEDs, and they're a true replacement for incandescent light bulbs. And, of course, the U.S. Department of Energy really wants to see people saving more energy with light bulbs because they're not efficient. And fluorescent lights, I don't like them because they kill books. I'm not a fan of what they do. They're like the sun. They'll wash out the spines of your books on your shelves.
Mm-hmm.
So,
For an alternative.
So I've been looking for an alternative, and, you know, this might be it. Still not as efficient as an LED, but, boy, they sure gotten close.
I've heard about this technology for displays mostly. Are you saying that these could get bright enough to actually reduce?
Yeah, to replace your light bulb.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that it was going to be commercially viable. I guess it has to do with them being bright enough, but also the cost coming down to see them in
miles. That actually reminds me, on a related note, some researchers at Purdue University have found a way to make low cost and yet bright LEDs for home lighting. Just to give some stats, when you have an incandescent bulb, a standard light bulb,
mm-hmm.
only 10% of the electricity you're pumping in that light bulb will give you light.
Right, the rest.
The other 90% is heat.
Yeah, it's really inefficient.
Whereas if you use something like a compact fluorescent, that's going to be a lot more light compared to the amount of heat.
Mm-hmm.
And LEDs actually do better than compact fluorescents. But the thing now is that they're really expensive. It's like $100 for a bulb,
mm-hmm.
which is
too expensive
for a lot of folks, even though they will last many, many years. Now these researchers have come up with a way to make them a lot more efficient and environmentally friendly and bring the price down.
Nice.
Yeah, OLEDs have the ability to flex, unlike LEDs. They have improved color, and they can potentially be manufactured by a cheaper organic ink printing processes.
Like an inkjet.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's very cool.
Yeah.
All right, let's go ahead and take another call from Pacific Grove. Diane, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi. Hello.
Hello.
Hello, Diane. I don't know if we're going to be able to take your call today, Diane. I'm so sorry.
Send us an email.
Oh. Well, okay, try it again. Go ahead. What's your question?
Okay. Are you there?
Yes.
Okay. My question is about the testing scores and stuff that we were talking about earlier in the news stuff.
Yeah, math test scores.
Right, I'm always wondered if they have ever like stratified those studies so that they're comparing, you know, the high score people from one country over to another, and wondering how, or even the low score people, and seeing how they, you know, people with very low score math scores or very high math scores instead of doing to find out how the comparison between countries, you know, like. We're always saying that the United States does so poorly in math and science, mm-hmm. and whatever. And I'm wondering if the people in the high end of the curve do just as well as the people on the high end of the curve.
Oh, interesting.
Yes, they have. I don't have the studies in front of me, but a lot of the studies about the people on the higher echelons, people who are doing best at math, the U.S. does quite well. They're not that far behind. It's the average student. So when you're talking about the national average with regard to South Korea or the national average with regard to France or the national average with regard to the U.S., U.S. students are – that's where U.S. students trail behind.
Right.
That we have
not
so many more on – yeah, we have so many more on the lower echelons that are – that offset any of the highest. When you look at the highest scores.
Diane, thank you very much for the call. So it's the higher scores are kind of all over the map, the geniuses, if you will.
Well, just folks who are doing well.
All right. Well, we have had a lot of calls and questions today, and we've got a lot of content up on the website. So if you heard something today that you really liked, want to know more about, please go ahead and visit our website. And if you don't, if you know some people or you yourself don't always get GeekSpeak, keep in mind we do podcast GeekSpeak. It's available through NPR, but you can get to it by going to geekspeak.org. And podcasting, of course, allows you to download it, and it's available to you all the time. And I'd love it if you did that. That's at geekspeak.org. Other follow-up little closures we have, anybody have a couple more closure comments? Miles, Sean, Ryder?
Have a great day.
Yeah, be geeky.
We had another call about RazzoLink saying that it works great from North Monterey County, which is nice to hear rural high-speed access being available. Very, very convenient for people. So thank you for calling in with that feedback. We always like to hear your successes and sometimes your failures about technology. GeekSpeak is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation, and offering one-appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. GeekSpeak is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. Next week's show, we're going to be talking in the air room with David Weber about his book, Buy Schism's Rent Asunder. Is that how you say?
No, Schism.
Schism, thank you.
By Schism Rent Asunder.
And I've been reading the book, and it's fantastic, and I'm looking forward to meeting him next week.
He's a great author. If you're into sci-fi, go check out David Weber.
And Sean and I, and possibly Ryder on Tuesday, will be on Talk of the Bay, also talking about sci-fi with Rick Kleffel.
And Charles Stross.
Very exciting stuff.
That's going to be fun,
too. This is Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. The Geeks This Morning were Sean Cleland, Miles Elam, and Ryder Brooks. Broadcasting HD radio on 88.9 FM. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Auto, on the web at kusp.org. See you next week.